what they do, and we must fight back. You can torture us and bomb us. Fire is catching. And if we burn, you burn with us.
Good evening.
Are you awake yet? I hope. We've tried and we've tried for years and years to use passive resistance and loud voices to make a change. The time is over. Your governments around the world have no other goal than to decimate your entire existence at the hands of the bankers and the elites. The war is coming, and it's your choice to decide if you want to be a warrior or a victim. Denial is not a choice anymore. Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, the number one listener supported radio station on the planet, not giving up. Revolution Radio.
Funeral. It is sad to think that sooner or later those you love will do the same for you. And you may have thought it tragic, not to mention other adjectives, to think of all the weeping they will do. But don't you worry, no more ashes, no more sackcloth, and an armband made of black cloth will someday nevermore adorn a sleeve. For if the bomb that drops on you gets your friends and neighbors too, there'll be nobody left behind to grieve, and we will all go together when we go. What a comforting fact that is to know. Universal bereavement, an inspiring achievement. Yes, we all will go together when we go. We will all go together when we go, all suffused with an incandescent glow. No one will have the endurance to collect on his insurance. Lloyd's of London will be loaded when they go. We will all fry together when we fry. We'll be French fried potatoes by and by. There will be no more misery when the world is our rotisserie. Yes, we all will fry together when we fry. We will all bake together when we bake. There'll be nobody present at the wake. With complete participation in that grand incineration, nearly 3 billion hunks of well-done steak. We will all char together when we char. And let there be no moaning of the bar. Just sing out a te deum when you see that ICBM, and the party will be come as you are.
This is Jim Fetzer, your host on The Raw Deal, where I'm very, very pleased to have as my extraordinary guest today, one of the most remarkable personalities of our time. He had a highly unlikely career from a professional wrestler to a small town mayor to the governor of Minnesota, a visiting professor at Harvard, a television personality and host, Jesse Ventura's America, Jesse Ventura's Conspiracy Theory. He's one of my favorite people on the face of Earth. Welcome to The Raw Deal, Governor Jesse Ventura. Jesse, it's great to have you here.
Hi, Jim. Nice to be here today. You did get a couple things wrong, though.
Tell me.
Brooklyn Park is not particularly a small town.
Okay.
It's a first-ring suburb of Minneapolis with a population of near six figures.
Okay. Oh, I was unaware, Jesse. Yeah.
No, I'm just having fun with you because Brooklyn Park's a first ring suburb of Minneapolis, and it's actually a very metro area. And I was mayor there, then went back to the private sector for about 6 or 7 years, and then won the governor in the election of 98 and took office in 99.
Well, as I explained to my audience yesterday, we got to know each other initially because of my first book on JFK assassination science when he came up to Duluth for that public-private aquarium and spent 15 minutes on the aquarium and 45 minutes talking to me about JFK's assassination. Jesse, it's been great what you've done. I still regard your short show as the best, maybe, program. It's about 45 minutes done out in Ventura, where you flew me out to set up to make sure the angles and the distances were right. I think that's one of the best short ever done on JFK.
Well, thank you. You know, it actually, conspiracy theory lasted 3 years. We had three seasons out of it. I forget how many shows we do per season, but we actually lasted 3 years before before powers beyond my control, I think, kind of moved in and caused the cancellation of the show, shall we say. I was getting a lot of heat for that show. You know, I got read off on the floor of Congress for one thing that we found out doing the show. And there was a lot of the one thing you truly learn is that you cannot go up to the government and ask them a question and expect to get an answer. They will refer you to other things they've said about the particular subject. Like, if you ask them a question on say JFK, they would refer you to the Warren Commission. If you asked a question about 9/11, they'll just refer you to the 9/11 Commission report. And both of those commission reports have a lot of holes in them and a lot of unanswered questions that I always felt deserved answers. So my involvement with JFK always was it became personal for me when I had just gotten out of the military and I was at college and I happened to hear Mark Lane speak. And it was at that time he was one of the very first ever to question the official story about the murder of President Kennedy. And I had just gotten out of the military then, and it kind of opened my eyes up, and I went, wow, you mean Lee Harvey Oswald might not have did it? You know, I was like everybody else. I was, I think, 13 or whatever when the president was killed, and life went on. The Beatles came, and, you know, for us teenagers, life moved on. But that was the first time I ever started to question JFK. And then, of course, it was during my wrestling career, and wrestling switched at one point from driving to flying as it went through its transition into what you see today. And all of a sudden, instead of driving cars, I was flying in airplanes. Well, that's a lot of boredom. You sit in airports and you sit on planes and you do it day in and day out. So I decided, rather than just being sleeping or doing nothing, I started to read a lot. And of course, I started reading every book I could get my hands on that dealt with the John F. Kennedy assassination. And I would read them during my travel experiences of wrestling. And so when we got to the point of doing conspiracy theory, I made them promise me. I said, if we get to a second year, I said, I want you to let me do one on Kennedy. And they were good about it because we made it to the second year and they followed through with their promise and I got to do one on Kennedy. And I think the biggest thing I found out on doing the Kennedy thing was that, number one, I couldn't make the shots, and if I can't make them, neither could Oswald. I'll go to my grave with that, because I had expert in both pistol and rifle, and the type of work that I did in the military, I shot a lot of handheld weapons. Let me just put it to you that way. And so if I couldn't make the shot, and I wasn't even shooting at a moving target, and that weapon, the Mannlicher Arcano, is horrible. It's one of the worst weapons I think I've ever fired. And they want us to believe that this is with the bolt action that he could get off those rounds in, you know, whatever it was, 6-7 seconds. I can't remember today. but it's virtually impossible. You can't get back on target that quick. And, you know, so, and then the other thing I truly learned doing the show was when I got to interview Mr. Newman. And for those of you who don't know who Mr. Newman is, probably on this show, everybody knows, I don't know, but I'll go ahead. Mr. Newman, everybody sees him in the Zapruder film. He's the gentleman who has thrown his body over his children right on the grass in front of the grassy knoll to protect his kids. And so he and his wife and kids were there to see the president that day. And, of course, the shots came right over his shoulder, or the fatal shot did, where I believe it came from the grassy knoll, and went right over Mr. Newman's shoulder. And the thing I learned that day that was so astounding to me, here you've got Mr. Newman, the closest living witness to the fatal headshot, the closest. And he told his story in an FBI report that I read, and I asked him, I said, well, Mr. Newman, what did the Warren Commission say? Because your report says you felt the bullet came from over your shoulder and that it was shot from behind you behind the picket fence. And you testified to that in your report here. I said, what did the Warren Commission say about this when you went in front of them? He looked at me, a very nice man, and he said, well, he said, I or my wife were never called to the Warren Commission.
It's shocking, isn't it, Jesse?
I just sat there for a moment, Jim, and I thought, what? I said, you have the two closest living witnesses to the fatal headshot, and you wouldn't even bring them in to talk with them and hear what they had to say? What kind of investigation could this possibly be?
One that was not interested in the truth. Yes, the 10 closest witnesses, Jesse, were not called into the Warren Commission. You know,
well,
one
and, of... You know, And you know, I'm not going to run through all of it, Jim, but, you know, that's what got me started anyway. And then the more I delve into it, the more I came to the realization that we weren't exactly told the truth, I don't believe, about how our great president, John Kennedy, was killed. And I think we deserve to know the truth. And I'd like to say this right now. You know, Donald Trump made a lot of promises when he ran for office, and one of those promises was that he would release all of the Kennedy assassination papers that the government has. And by law, they were supposed to be released in 2017, a year into his presidency, by law, from way back in the 90s when Oliver did his film. They said they'll be released. Well, of course, they weren't. And I'm very disappointed that Donald Trump, right now, he wants to screw with everything. He wants to, you know, have a rocky transition, this and that. I'll tell him what he ought to do if he wants to achieve that. Go in there right now and release every document the U.S. government has on the murder of John Kennedy. Release them.
And
why doesn't he do that? It was a campaign promise he made. He said he would. And then he's reneged on it.
Well, he actually released a lot of them, Jesse. He wanted to release
them. Yeah, but he said he'd do all of them. Not all of them. The important ones were not released.
Yeah, the most important, the file on George Ioannidis, who was Ioannidis, who was actually involved in both Jack and Bobby's. He was like the PSYOP officer, is the most important file that's not been released. I'll tell you,
exactly.
They did release a whole lot of documents about Mexico City, Jesse, and it's fascinating. Larry Rivera has gone through those painstakingly. They did not release them in electronic version that you could search, you know, electronically. He had to go through them all by hand. But he and I and Gary King have done many different programs about his discoveries from these new documents, which show that the whole idea of Oswald having gone to Mexico City was a complete contrivance. They're putting pressure on uncooperative witnesses. It even turns out that among the CIA's assets in Mexico, Jesse, were three presidents of Mexico.
Well, I'm not privy to all of that, you know, and I'm not going to speculate on it. But I do wish that, if the president really wants to go out with a bang, release those documents. After all, you know, they were supposed to, by law, be released in 2017. So he's
yes.
not doing anything out of the ordinary with it. And you know, but obviously those documents can't be released, you know, or it would kill the story, apparently. That's the only thing I can get from it for why there would be this hesitancy. And, you know, and that's been my main course with it anyway from the beginning. If it was what they said it was, and simplifying the whole thing, if it was what they said he was, that Oswald was this disgruntled little Marine who became Marxist and, you know, and got angry and decided he wanted to be well known and he killed the president, well, my question has always been, if that's the true story, then why would anything have to be locked up?
Yes, yes, yes.
Because Lee Harvey Oswald, if the story's true, was privy to nothing. Now, I don't believe that. I believe he had a very high security clearance and worked within the intelligence community of our military and all that. I think he wore kind of two hats while he served as a Marine, and he certainly was no dummy because they sent him to learn Russian. And, you know, I spent 6 years in the military, and they didn't send dumb guys to learn foreign languages. I can assure you of that. You know, you've got to be pretty much on the ball and be a pretty intelligent person for the U.S. military to invest their time and money in sending you, like, to Monterey, which is where the big school was in my day, where you could learn Vietnamese, you could learn all these other French and all these other foreign languages that were appropriate for the time and all that. But they didn't send dummies there. They sent the most intelligent guys and the guys who had clearances to where they would be using that type of thing. And then that deals back to Oswald's military career. Oswald was not a regular. Oswald was a radar operator, you know.
Right.
And so Oswald was not used to shooting weapons in the service. The service has a lot of that don't. I'm getting an in call, so that'll disappear in a second. Don't worry.
Sure,
but,
sure.
But, the military has a lot of jobs where you don't just carry a weapon and kill the enemy. There's support staff, there's intelligence gathering, and like Oswald was a radar technician. And so those jobs are just as important as the knuckle draggers, the infantry and all that, but they're not going to be proficient, so I don't hold nothing against Oswald not being a particularly good shot. He did a job in the military, which the military will do. They will send you to work in your strongest asset, generally.
Yes.
And so Oswald was more of a thinker than he was a, you know, a knuckle dragger. I was probably a little bit more of a knuckle dragger. You know.
Well, I supervised recruit training in the Marine Corps. I had 15 DIs and 300 recruits under my command. And you're indeed correct that Oswald was a mediocre shot. But the more important point you made in passing is the following. If the assassination occurred as the government claims, three lucky shots with two hits from a disgruntled Marine, then there's no national security aspect to the case. So how can they withhold
exactly
on the grounds
of that? Why would anything need to be locked up? And then I'll just touch on one other thing that really gets to me. The great Harold Weisberg, who wrote the great book Whitewash, he wrote the three or four of them, tremendous.
Right.
And I remember when his book had to come out where the Warren Commission had this special session where it had come to light that Oswald had an FBI informant number. I believe it
right.
came out of Houston or something. And so right. they had to call a special session of the Warren Commission to deal with this.
Yes.
So they called the special session, they dealt with it, and it took Harold 10 years to get the minutes to that meeting. Now, you'd figure the meeting was this. Wow, we just learned Oswald may be an FBI informant number. We better investigate that. That's what my natural thought would be if I were sitting on the Warren Commission. We better find out if this is true. Well, the actual meeting, the special session that took place, dealt with that not at all. It was completely to deal with how do we cover this up?
Yes,
how do we
yes.
keep the public from learning this?
That's
now,
right.
what kind of an investigation is that when you get information and you think your job is to throw dirt on that information and bury it so no one knows about it.
Oh, Jesse, you got it exactly right. That's right. Informant number 179, as I recall, he was actually getting $200 a month for his role as an FBI informant, which is why the federal government could not release his U-2 forms, Jesse.
His tax returns. That's another good one.
How absurd is that?
What on earth would be wrong? Oswald's got the only tax returns that longer than Donald Trump.
I don't know if I ever had the chance to tell you what I thought was...
It must be the same guys working on Oswald's tax return that's working on President Trump's.
Yeah. I don't know if...
Hey, Jim, he ain't quite done yet.
Jesse, I thought one of the best parts of that show was when you confronted Vince Bugliosi. You know, if anyone goes to my website, jimtheconspiracyguy.com, you have one of my most favorite photographs of my entire life of you and me and Vince having lunch in St. Paul after he got that honorary award from Hamlin. Because when you confronted him on your show about his attempt to defend the Warren Report, you nailed him, Jesse. You did it so skillfully. He was embarrassed. Here he got this famous prosecutor, and you were the guy who nailed it.
Well, you know, Vince is gone now, and I've always admired Vince, you know. But Vince really, when he wrote that book, that 1,000 pages or whatever, Reclaiming History,
1,500.
I just couldn't believe a man of his stature could do that. But then again, I can understand. I today understand why Vince wrote it. He did it partially out of ego. He wanted to write a book that he felt if he were convicting Oswald, this is how he would have did it. And it doesn't really mean he could have been successful, because I believe Oswald was innocent. But, you know, Vince was trying to make a compelling argument that if I were the prosecutor and I got Oswald into court, this book is how I would have convicted him, you know, with the evidence that there was and blah, blah, blah. And I disagree with him. I don't think he could have, personally. But I just see it that Vince wrote a book because you got to remember, he's a prosecutor. And so his mind runs like a government prosecutor, and he's going to get his prosecution and whatever it takes to get it, and what moves you'd have to make and what you would have to convince a jury of to have them come back with a guilty plea. And so I think it was more of an ego thing, that Vince kind of was on an ego that I'm one of the greatest prosecutors in the world, because of course he's world renowned for the Manson murders and all of that stuff. And so that's what I think it was more than anything, because I confronted Vince with stuff that he didn't have answers for.
Sure, of course. Yeah, absolutely.
And the reason being, Jim, is because there are no answers for it.
Yes. My take is,
you know, it's that
simple. Yeah,
they can't answer the questions because they don't have the right answers to answer it.
My take's a little different. I think Vince was paid $1 million for the book, Jesse. They wanted it as a disinformation piece so they could claim this famous prosecutor had actually agreed with a Warren Commission. Do you know, buried in that 1,500 pages, he says that my three books are the only exclusively scientific books ever published on the assassination. He makes that acknowledgement. But if he delved into it, he'd find we demonstrate there that the autopsy x-rays were altered to conceal a massive blowout at the back of the head. The brain in the National Archives isn't even shown in the National Archives. It isn't even the brain of JFK. That there's evidence of a second shot to the head. That the Zapruder film has been massively edited and revised. I mean, how can he acknowledge these are the only scientific books and then simply set them aside and ignore them? That was his methodology, Jesse.
Well, you know, that's what you do as a prosecutor. Think about it. You're not going to bring forth necessarily the testimony to ruin your case, even though you're supposed to. You know, prosecutors are supposed to bring forth all evidence, whether good or bad.
That's right. Both sides. Yes.
But I'm sure as the years go on, that thought process probably gets a little warped.
And
who knows? You know, I still have a lot of respect for Vince. You know, and the job he did, because it's a job that you have to be very skillful at, and it's probably not the greatest job in the world. You know, dealing with court cases of the magnitude that he dealt with, especially out in L.A. But like I said, I couldn't believe he wrote that book, and you know, we'll never get the truth on it because there's an there. Oh, by the way, you know who I got to talk to the other day?
Yes. Go ahead, tell us.
I got to talk to, you're familiar with James Files?
Yes.
Yeah, I spent an afternoon with him about a month ago on outside engagement here in Minnesota with about six people. We were keeping our distances and spread out. We all wore masks, and apparently he's out of prison now.
Yes.
And he, of course, is confessing to being the Grassy Knoll shooter. And I found that kind of interesting because my wife looked at me and said, well, how can he confess to it and not get arrested? And I looked at my wife. I said, honey, he's the safest man on the planet. I said, the U.S. government is not, he can stand on top of the Empire State Building and scream that he killed John F. Kennedy from behind the Grassy Knoll, and I said, there won't be one government official who will even take notice of it, because if they did, they would be admitting that for 60 years they lied to us.
Yes.
Or they deceived us. So it's, and he said an interesting thing. He said, once the government tells the lie, they have to stick with it forever.
Yes. Well, Files is an interesting...
No, and coming from him, if he's legit, if he is indeed legit, and I have my questions about that yet, but he's right with that. The minute the government makes a decision that they're going with a lie, they will never change it. They will stick with the lie to the very end.
Jesse, we got a break. It's great to have you here. Stick around for my continued conversation with former Minnesota Governor Jesse Ventura.
Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. We'll be right back after this message.
Even the government admits that 9/11 was a conspiracy. But did you know that it was an inside job? That Osama had nothing to do with it? That the Twin Towers were blown apart by a sophisticated arrangement of mini or micro nukes? That Building 7 collapsed 7 hours later because of explosives planted in the building? Barry Jennings was there. He heard them go off and felt himself stepping over dead people. The U.S. Geological Survey conducted studies of dust gathered from 35 locations in Lower Manhattan and found elements that would not have been there had this not been a nuclear event. Ironically, that means the government's own evidence contradicts the government's official position. 9/11 was brought to us compliments of the CIA, the neocons of the Department of Defense, and the Mossad. Don't let yourself be played. Read America Nuked on 9/11, available at moonrockbooks.com. That's moonrockbooks.com.
Revolution Radio every Wednesday 8 p.m. Eastern Time on Studio B for Momentary Zen with host Zen Garcia at freedomslips.com. the People Station.
Como va? This is Giuseppe from the District of Criminals. I've pulled some strings and gotten you front row seats to my new show, The Perfect Triangle. Live Friday, 6 to 8 p.m. Eastern Time on Revolution Radio Studio A. The perfect triangle is equilateral, three sides of the same length. In an angry, bipolar world, three perfect sides reveal many truths.
Body, mind, and spirit.
Thought, word, and deed.
Conspiracy, propaganda, and truth.
Natural health, allopathic tyranny, and your body.
Freedom, globalism, and sovereign nations.
And so much more. Each week, the perfect triangle will blast through fake news lies, champion the natural way and natural law, unravel the Orwellian deceptions of our corrupt government, reveal the satanic evil of globalist banks and transnational corporations. Tune in every Friday, 6 p.m. Eastern, to Revolution Radio Studio A for thoughtful discussions with free thinkers. Your calls are always welcome. The Perfect Triangle, with Giuseppe from the District of Criminals. Join me, won't you?
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates.
You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
Files is an interesting case to me, Jesse, because when I was still in Duluth, his Confessions of an Assassin and videotape came out, and two of the television stations there wanted me to review it, so I watched it twice. Now, at the time, I gave it an 80% truth rating because I thought he knew a lot about the assassination. But yep. I thought he didn't seem to have right disqualified him, including... He didn't talk about the limo stop that set up his shot on the one hand, and he said that he'd been invited to participate in the assassination the morning of the 22nd, which I thought was frankly absurd. But I'll tell you, David W. Plus, I didn't have the apparent effect of a shot that would account for what he claimed to have done, though there was this... The shell casing with this tooth imprint that was found there in the dirt at the picket fence. Now, David Bantick he's the leading expert on the medical evidence, as you know,
right.
has now concluded there was a third shot to the head, not only from the back, from the Daltex in the vicinity of the external occipital protuberance and into the right temple that blew out the back of his head, but by the right ear. And what's interesting, Jesse, is there's this distribution of metallic particles in the brain. When David first went into the National Archives back in 1992, he had told me going in, he thought he'd find two things. One, evidence of a second shot to the head, and other, also that the x-rays had been altered. He found both in his newest book. This is an online book about the JFK head wounds, for which he invited me to write the preface. He talks about the discovery of a third shot to the head, which was the one that created that distribution of metallic particles, where Files always claimed he used a mercury bullet. I'm now open to the possibility that Files actually did fire that shot, where the one shooter, Jesse, was at the intersection of the Triple Underpass and the picket fence. That would have been Frank Sturgis. He was firing from an above-ground sewer opening, was a perfect location. Files was more further down, you know, roughly in the midway between the pergola and the triple underpass. But I'm now open to Files having shot him as well. I still think, however, the idea that he was invited to participate in the assassination that morning is just frankly absurd.
Well, for me, it's he won't give his background very much. And that's where I have the problem with him. When he said he shot him with a mercury bullet, though, that gave him credibility with me because of some of the recent books I've read, that deal with the fact that, there's certain elements like John F. Kennedy's watch was given to a guy, and it's another story, but he went through hell because the watch had the mercury on it. Mercury will last forever and all that. But that aside, the part about files that draws my doubt is that he won't give a chronological order to his life. And he claims he did the Kennedy shooting at 21 years old. Now, here's another part of the story. He said he was with Nicoletti, and that Nicoletti was the guy shooting from the Dow Tex building, him and his second, and that he was a reserve guy at the picket fence who was to take him if he got that far. Well, he said Nicoletti had never killed anyone with a rifle. He had only used shotguns and handguns up close, the mob guy. Well, it seems peculiar to me that if you're going to set up an operation to shoot the President of the United States using high-powered rifles, that you would send people to do it who had a great experience in shooting them to begin with.
Yes.
And so that part left me doubt, going, wait a minute, why would they send, and then him being 21 years old, and he claims to have spent 14 months in Laos working for Fletcher Prouty in the U.S. military. Well, I went through extensive military training. I went in at 18. I spent 13 months just being trained before I deployed. And then to do that long of a deployment, that's another part that I start questioning his age, because if he would have had to go in at 17, which would mean his parents would have to sign for him, then he claims there's no records of him. They've all been washed clean because of the secret type things he dealt with. And then he claims to have known Oswald down in Louisiana running guns, which, of course, we know Oswald and Ferry and them were involved in that stuff in Louisiana. He claims that he knew him there. And so how on earth at that young age could you go from 14 months in Laos, go through basic military training first, and then some type of specialized thing, because obviously we didn't even have troops there then. You know, we had the only people over there at that time were advisors. So he would have to go through very extensive, high-level training and then spend 14 months over there. Then he said he was involved in the thing to kill Castro with the mob. Well, at what point did he join the mob? And he says it because it was working with the CIA to kill Castro.
Yes.
Which we all know is true. That did take place. But here you're talking about a kid who would have to be 17 years old when he went in. And he would rise to the level that when the Chicago mob, apparently chosen by the CIA, as he said, to kill Kennedy, would choose a 21-year-old kid.
Yeah. Good. Yeah.
To shoot the most important shot ever in the annals of modern history.
Yes.
And I find that part, he needs to fill in those blanks to me. He needs to tell me, when did you go to boot camp? What type of training did you get? When did you graduate? You claim to have gone to Laos and spent 14 months over there and then come back to the U.S. At what point did you transfer into the CIA? And at what point did you go through training to leave the military to become part of the CIA?
Those are all excellent points, Jesse. And
they come from me, Jim, because I'm former military. You know, I spent 6 years, and my family, just so people understand my train of thought on your show and where I come from, every member of my immediate family served in a time of war. Both my parents were World War II veterans. My brother and I are both Vietnam veterans. And my mother, how many people can say their mother? My mom served in North Africa, which predated Normandy. She was over fighting Rommel on the North African deserts. No, she was a nurse. But she was there, though, physically. And my father had 6 bronze battle stars. He fought North Africa, Normandy, Battle of the Bulge, Remagen Bridge, Anzio, and finished in Berlin and lived.
Jesse, I got to throw in, you know, one of my wife's favorite movies is Predator, where you use the line, "I ain't got time to bleed." That's probably your most famous line of all time.
Well, it's a funny story about it. It got cut from the film. We weren't going to shoot it. That happens when you do movies, when it starts getting to the end and the money starts, you know, disappearing. They start panicking, so they start cutting different shots that they haven't done. And the "I ain't got time to bleed" shot had actually been cut. It wasn't going to be shot, which greatly disappointed Richard Chavez and me, because Richard was my fellow actor.
We
were the only two actual veterans. Richard had served in the Army, and I served in the Navy. And so we wanted to do that scene together because we were the actual veterans in the group. And the only reason we got to shoot it was because Arnold got sick.
Really?
Old Montezuma's Revenge caught him. We shot it down in Puerto Vallarta, Mexico, and in the jungles down there. And Arnold got sick and couldn't film that day. I was on hold. They called me up. They said, "Can you be out on the set within an hour?" I said, "Oh, for what? I'm on hold." They said, "We're going to do the 'I ain't got time to bleed' scene." I said, "I'm on my way." I said, "I'm on my way."
Oh, it's wonderful, Jesse. We love it.
Well, we got out there. We got out there, and the reason I knew the shot would end up in the film was because the director, John McTiernan, he was one of these guys that didn't offer a lot of emotions. He didn't say much. He would just move on to his next shot. He never said, "Hey, good work. Nice, I like the way you delivered that," or blah, blah. He was not a big talking guy, and they all have their own styles. Well, when we did the "I Ain't Got Time to Bleed" scene, when the cut came, John McTiernan turned and walked away and started laughing. And it was at that point I knew it would end up in the film, because if it could make John McTiernan laugh, I thought, then it's going to make everybody else laugh, too.
Jesse,
and so I thought, it's for sure going to end up in the film now, because a lot of your scenes end up on the floor.
Yeah, I can believe it. I'll tell you, that's a wonderful movie, Jesse, and you made a great play in that role. You were perfect.
Well, a lot of people are angry because they said I died too quick. They need to understand something. They needed to understand we had to show the power of the Predator.
Yeah.
And Blaine was the toughest guy in the platoon. Blaine had survived everything. I mean, who else could spit tobacco juice on Apollo Creed's boots and get away with it? You know, Blaine was a badass.
Yeah.
And so he had to die when he did, because if you notice, when I die, I'm the only one who gets a funeral. You know, with Bill Duke and I. And when I died, that's when the platoon fell apart, didn't they?
Yeah. It's a really, really good movie.
That was the psychological thing. My God, Blaine is dead.
Yeah.
And that made them all feel very mortal.
Yes.
Because if Blaine's dead, any one of us could be next.
Those are astute observations about the film. Just to return to files, Nicoletti didn't fire any shots from the Daltex. We've identified it was an anti-Castro Cuban by the name of Nestor Tony Escadro. And Jesse, he was supervised in the building by George Herbert Walker Bush.
Well, I'm not going to get into, you know, I've read where George Herbert Walker was around that day, and I've read to where he gave himself an alibi by getting the hell out of there and then calling up claiming he knew who did the shooting or something or other, and he made sure they knew he wasn't in Dallas at the time he called. But, and, you know, and I'm aware of his past record with the CIA, you know, and that at the Bay of Pigs invasion, it was actually two of his ships at the oil company that were acting in support, because one of them was even named the Barbara.
One was Houston and Barbara, yeah, and the code name was Zapata, which was the name of his
exactly, was Zapata Oil. So,
right.
You know, and plus the fact that George did kind of deceive everybody when he told everybody he had never been in the CIA before. Remember when he was being...
Well, that was a public relations stunt, yes.
You know, and he kind of told us a little white lie, saying that he hadn't, when indeed he certainly had.
And
you know, but that's that part of government you have to understand. And as far as I know, that in that part of government, you lot of cloak and dagger goes on, and a lot of people are who they aren't supposed to be, and a lot of people are with multiple personalities and multiple names and things of that nature. It's very much like pro wrestling.
Very much like pro wrestling, yes. Yes.
Because we all wrestle. In the old days, if you were a villain, you never wrestled under your real name. It was too damn dangerous.
Yes, yes, yes. I don't know if you've ever seen Jesse Curry's JFK assassination file. After he retired as chief of police of Dallas, he went to work as a head of security for 7-Eleven stores, and he published a little paperback book called Jesse Curry's JFK assassination file, and had a lot of photographs. And I may have been the first to identify George Herbert Walker Bush standing in front of the Daltex, hands in his pockets, head tilted, right there for a certainty, standing in front of the Daltex that afternoon.
Well, you know, there's so much evidence out there on JFK that my final conclusion is very simple, that, you know, I feel that in order for that to have been pulled off like it did from beginning to end, and still today we don't know the truth, well, it required participation at the highest level of government, which, of course, after the fact, and even I feel that there could be involvement before the fact, is LBJ and J. Edgar Hoover both, because
yes.
They certainly did nothing to find out the truth and actually covered it up. And
yeah.
LBJ's involvement could have been much more extensive, because there's a lot of proof and things out there that LBJ knew that it was going to happen before it did, and that it was basically. And so my ultimate end belief is it was simply a coup d'etat.
Yeah, well, you're correct, Jesse. I mean,
you know, that took place in America, and our government naturally will not admit to a coup d'etat. Just it's. I kind of laugh too. You know, we've had all this stuff going on about the Russian interference in our elections of 2016, and this, that, and what have you. And I'm certain they did to a certain small extent, but they didn't change the course of the election in any way. With whatever that the Russians allegedly did in 2016. But, you know, what bothers me the most about the reporting of the Russian involvement in the 2016 election is that our media really fails to tell our people the fact that that stuff goes on all the time. And that, you know, what's the institute? I can't think of them off the top of my head right now. But they did a huge study from 1948 until 2010, and they discovered that the United States had interfered in 81 different elections in, I believe, 45 different countries where we interfere.
Yes.
And yet we're never told that. We're never told by our media or our news people or anything like that, that the United States interferes in elections all the time, too, with foreign countries. And that it seems to be standard operating procedure at a certain level. And I always like to equate it to, you remember Mad Magazine?
Sure.
Okay, you remember there were always two cartoons in Mad of spy versus spy?
Well, I was aware of it.
The black spy and the white spy, and the one screws over the other one at the beginning of the magazine, and then at the end of the magazine, the other one will get revenge.
Nice.
And
yes.
I kind of view that's what goes on. I mean, it's clear to me that, you know, all sides play their games in the intelligence community and all that, but in the end, it truly doesn't have any impact, I don't see, especially on our elections, because, you know, who I work for today, I work for RT, which is Russian Television America.
Yes.
And I get very angry over the fact that they call us the right arm of the Kremlin, or whatever they refer to us as.
RT is a very responsible news source. It's one of the three best international.
I get angry over the fact that the mainstream media refers to us as that, and our own government makes us register as foreign agents.
Really?
Yeah.
Huh.
Oh, and there's not a word said about it. The First Amendment or nothing. You don't hear a peep out of the fact that we're the only ones. Even Al Jazeera doesn't have to do it. And the BBC don't. Nobody else but RT, we have to register as foreign agents. And I take offense to that and the fact that I'm born and raised here. I've been a governor and I've been a mayor. And I'm an honorably discharged Navy veteran, and I've paid taxes to this country for over 50 years. Do you know that I can't get on the floor of Congress with my ID from RT?
Really?
No, I'm banned.
That's outrageous, Jesse.
Oh yeah, but you don't hear a word about it. And now I'm going to tell you what happened. RT was named in 2016 for interference in the U.S. elections. Do you know what we did? I read the FBI report.
Yeah, you reported on it, I'll bet.
No. Do you know what we did? Do you know what our transgression was?
Tell me.
We did it. It's true. Here's what we did. This is what they said was interfering in the U.S. election. In 2016, RT held debates for the third-party candidates. The Constitution Party, the Libertarians, the Green Party, we gave them a format where we put them on TV in a debate and allowed the U.S. people to hear what they had to say rather than just the Democrats and Republicans.
Yeah.
And for that, we were called interfering in the election. Now, let's follow through on that. That means that when Jesse Ventura won the governorship of Minnesota, that was an interference in the U.S. elections, wasn't it?
Oh, Jesse, it's ridiculous.
Using their thought process, because I was a third-party candidate.
Right.
I did not belong to either party, and I won. So obviously I interfered immensely in the U.S. elections. But that was RT's transgression. Now, in the 2018 elections, do you know what happened in them? That's the only time that I got an order from RT not to talk about something. We were ordered in 2018 not to even talk about the U.S. elections because we didn't want to be blamed again.
Because you couldn't talk about the election because you were worried they'd be banned again? That's terrible.
No, we would be blamed again for interfering.
Yeah. Oh, for Russian interference. Oh, Jesse.
Yeah. So therefore, we didn't say RT did not comment on the 2018 elections.
That's ridiculous.
Because we're owned by a U.S. corporation. But if they decide they could shut us down and throw us out because of this status of we're foreign agents.
Well, that would be outrageous. There wasn't any Russian interference even in 2016. That was something made up by John Podesta and Hillary Clinton to conceal her own entanglements with
Russia. I believe there was. I believe there was, but I believe the Russians should have thanked us. Or we should have thanked the Russians for it. I believe they interfered, but you know why we should have thanked them? What they did, the Russians were the ones that showed that the Democratic Party was fixed and that it didn't matter what Bernie Sanders did. Hillary Clinton already had the nomination locked.
Oh, yeah, that was a disgrace.
Well, I look at that as Russia did us a public service here. I said, thank you, Russia, for exposing that. We need to know that.
Yeah,
we
Debbie
need to
Wasser.
Know that these parties, both Democrats and Republicans, that it's all fixed.
Jesse, let me mention the phone number for callers. I'm sure a lot of people would like to speak with you. The number to call in to speak with Jesse or me, 540-352-4452, 540-352-4452. Mitchell will handle your call. Debbie Wasserman Schultz, who was then the head of the DNC, actually transferred 13 primaries Bernie had won to Hillary's column to guarantee she would be the nominee, Jesse. She virtually bought the DNC lock, stock, and barrel.
Well, whatever happened, I'm not privy to it because I'm not a Democrat, just as I'm not a Republican. I'm the true independent who doesn't take sides with either of the two political parties, because we have to fight on our own just to try to defeat them both. As we refer to them, we call them that the United States has only one party. It's called the corporate party.
The corporate party.
and both of these parties are part of that one party, the corporate party, because that's who sponsors them with all their money, and they're money driven. See, I tell people all the time, you need to understand, we have an entire election system that is based upon the concept of bribery. If you bribe the candidate, you'll get what you want. And now bribery in the private sector is against the law. But in our public sector, in our elections thing, it's status quo. It's business as usual. And I always warn people, look, if you want to go see a congressman, senator, or somebody, make sure you bring your checkbook. Because you ain't going to get in unless you write him a check. You know, and then he might see you, he or she might see you. But that's the system that the two parties have created. And it's the system that, like a person like me, I would have been a candidate, Jim, I'd have been a candidate this year, but the Green Party screwed up.
Oh, yes.
Oh, yeah. You know what happened?
Tell me.
I talked to the Green Party because all I wanted was their ballot access.
Yes.
Give me your ballot access in all the states. Put my name on there. I'll take care of running.
Yes.
But I asked them. I said, you have to give me an unobstructed trip to your nomination. I don't want to face a primary.
Yes.
You have to name me as your party, as your nomination for president. I said, I'm too old. I don't want to try to fix a fractured party, and I don't want to have to deal with a primary. If you will just make me your candidate, I said, I'll take on the Democrats and Republicans. I got enough to do that. But I said, and they wouldn't do it.
Let me reiterate the phone number to speak to one of the great personalities of our time, 540-352-4452. To speak to Jesse Ventura, I'm here, your host, Jim Fetzer. We're hitting a break, Jesse. We'll be right back.
Okay.
Like to take a moment to thank the listeners and hosts for all their support that has made Revolution Radio one of the biggest platforms for free speech in an ever-growing dark world of censorship. Unfortunately, this platform for free speech has never been free. We need the support of the people. It is the people like you, yes, you, that keeps the station in the front lines of the battle against tyranny and oppression. Please help support Revolution Radio so free speech will not be silenced in a world that seems to be going deaf to the real truth. With your support, we will be able to become an even bigger pillar of light in a dark world.
Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported radio station on the planet. Revolution Radio.
Was it a conspiracy? Did you know that the police in Boston were broadcasting, "This is a drill, this is a drill," on bullhorns during the marathon? That the Boston Globe was tweeting that a demonstration bomb would be set off during the marathon for the benefit of bomb squad activities? And that one would be set off in 1 minute in front of the library, which happened as the Globe had announced. Peering through the smoke, you could see bodies with missing arms and legs, but there was no blood. The blood only showed up later and came out of a tube. They used amputee actors and a studio-quality smoke machine. Don't let yourself be played. Check out And Nobody Died in Boston Either. Available at moonrockbooks.com. That's moonrockbooks.com.
All right, good day wherever you are in this world. I hope you're having a great day here listening to Revolution Radio. Everybody asks for this. Revolution Radio. Where the information never sleeps.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates.
You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
Well, I'm not surprised, Jesse, that we already have three callers on the line, two of whom actually are hosts of their own shows, and the other a regular. I'm going to begin with Chris. Chris, you're on with Jesse Ventura.
Well, truly an honor. Thank you for all your service, Governor. And, man, I'm really a big fan of everything you've ever done. So,
thanks. I just live life. That's all. I never really had anything. I never set out to be get elected to anything. I just I kind of follow Yogi Bear. You know, when Yogi said, "When you come to a Y in the road, take it."
Excellent. Hey, Governor,
I come to a Y in the road. I take it, and whatever I'm doing on that, I'll do it to the best of my ability till I come up to the next Y in the road.
Love fantastic. It. Love it.
I was going to say, he who fears death truly never lives life, you know? So I tell you, I admire your courage and you standing up for the right thing. Hey, I wanted to ask you while I got a quick chance, what are your perceptions on the DNC and what they're doing, not only with their own party within the Bernie Sanders demographic and disaffecting it with the Bernie or bus crew, trying to foist on the maybe I say the metrics or the election tampering of 2016 and disenfranchising Bernie. They say, what is it, fall in love during the primary, fall in line during the national. I spent 4 years watching them try to really foist this inequity onto Russia and almost leading us into World War III. I see a UN agenda like a lockstep COVID-19 and maybe even a CFR APAC Kafabi theatric that's coming on in a Shakespearean manner. Would you like to comment on some of your perceptions on this? Because I really appreciate your opinion.
Well, you know, my first of all, let me say this about working for RT and everybody like that. Larry King works there. Do I need to say more? I mean, who's more all-American than Larry King?
Right on.
So anyway, that aside, I going back to Bernie Sanders, there was what you had in 2016 really was you had two groups of people that essentially wanted the same thing. And that was they wanted government cleaned out and start over, let's start fresh. And those two groups were the far right with Donald Trump and the far left with Bernie Sanders. Now, the problem as I saw it was you're never going to get those two groups together.
Right.
Because one's so far left and the other's so far right, even though essentially they wanted the same thing. They wanted a turnover and a fresh start at our government. Now, let me tell a story. I went down to the Democratic when Bernie came to Minneapolis. I liked a lot of the things Bernie was doing and the disruption he was going to cause because I believe, and I'll back this up, I believe health care is a right. And that everyone should be able to go to the doctor if they're sick. Now, having said that, I went down to meet with Bernie, and I've never endorsed anybody, a Democrat or Republican, and Bernie calls himself an independent. Sure. So I went down there with hopes that I might even endorse him. but he wouldn't talk to me hardly. And when he did, I got him for a couple minutes in the hallway. I just asked him one question that I thought was most important. I said, Bernie, if you lose this nomination to Hillary Clinton, will you do an independent run, or will you support an independent candidate who would run?
Awesome.
And Bernie said, no, I will totally support Secretary Clinton.
Wow.
I said, okay, thank you, and I turned and left. And
yeah.
See, what that told me is this. Bernie's not an independent. Bernie masks as being an independent. Bernie's a Democrat. He runs in the Democratic primaries. He runs to get the Democratic nomination, and that makes him a Democrat. Now, I thought great things could happen possibly with Donald Trump. He came and visited me in 98, and he took from my campaign his most important thing he does, stole from me. That aside, I don't care. Politics, all's fair in it, whatever. But I thought Donald Trump could do great things until he aligned himself with the far right, the evangelical far right and all of that. And maybe he did it the right way, because he did it differently than I would have. And mine may not have worked. My way of doing it is I take on both the Democrats and Republicans at once. I want them both. Let's beat them in one election. Now, that may not work. And Trump, I can't argue with what he did, because what he did, he was successful at. He went after the Republicans with the far right. He defeated the Bush dynasty, which was the Republican dynasty. Then when he did a power grab and took over the Republican Party like he did, like a corporate takeover, he then turned his attention to the Democrats and beat the Clinton dynasty. So what he did succeeded. But he had to sell his soul to the far right to do it, and I know he sold his soul. You want to know why I know? Think of this for just one moment. What would the Republicans do if Barack Obama was running for president on the Democratic side, and I'm talking now the evangelical right here who support Trump. What would they do if Barack Obama had three wives and kids from all three wives? They would have had a field day attacking him personally for his lifestyle, and yet they fully accepted that Donald Trump has had three wives and kids from three different wives. It was okay for Donald, but, you know, think about that for a minute. What if the shoes were on another foot there? And see, that's what I do. I sit back as an independent, and I view both parties because I have to fight them both to try to do anything, because they make it. And when I say they work together. And that's why I told people this election, and hear me out on this, we needed to elect an independent president. And here's why. Polarization. Okay, Biden won. Now, that's not going to do nothing. The polarization is going to continue. If Trump would have won, continued polarization. The only way out is to give both those parties a common enemy. That's an independent, like what I did in Minnesota. I got the blueprint for it. I won. I had a Democratic Senate and a Republican House. For 3 years, whoever I generally sided with prevailed. But then came year number four, when the two sides jumped in bed together, started singing kumbaya. They wouldn't take my budget. They threw it out. They brought a fiscally irresponsible budget to me. I vetoed it first time. I vetoed it twice. They overrode my veto both times, Dems and Repubs, and then I fooled them. I didn't run. So they were stuck with that budget, and guess what happened? It was fiscally irresponsible. I knew it was. They ended up, Minnesota got a $5 billion deficit after I left, because they used the Republican and Democrat budgets, who, as they will do, here's what you people need to understand. Both parties will put their party before the country.
Yes.
Party comes first, then it's their big-time money donors come second, then it might be their personal viewpoints come third. We, the people, might be fourth, but there could be a fourth, and we could be fifth. I don't know. But we're no better than fourth and probably fifth.
Chris, stick around. We have four other callers now.
Okay.
I want to bring in Paul. Paul, go
there
ahead.
There you go. We'll move. I get running. Hey, don't blame me. I'm locked up under house arrest. When I get talking, I start going, baby.
Got it. Paul. You're on with Jesse.
Yeah, thank you. You know, it was interesting. Early on, I took note of what you said at the beginning of the show where you talked about the fact that when you ask government or government officials a question, they will always refer you to other things, but they won't answer the question. And it really just struck a chord with me because this has been my experience for the better part of 30 years, starting in the 80s when I wrote letters to the IRS, IRS commissioner, Social Security. Here recently with this whole COVID mask wearing hoax, written letters to...
Let me jump in and tell you the COVID mask wearing is not a hoax. And I'm going to say this to you. My mom spent her entire life wearing a mask. She was head nurse in surgery at North Memorial Hospital, Minneapolis. Now, if masks don't work, then why do they wear them in surgery? To protect people from germs. Wearing a mask is not a hoax.
Okay, wearing a mask is a complete and total hoax. I will never back down on that from you or anybody.
Well, fine. A total hoax, huh? Well, the next the next time you have to have some surgery and get put under with an anesthetic, tell the doctors and nurses they don't have to wear a mask, that they don't have to worry about it.
We have a difference, obviously, about masks.
Anyway, I'm not going to argue over that.
Go ahead. Don't argue and just listen to what I'll say quickly.
Paul, go to another question. Go ahead. Paul.
You know, I didn't have any other questions. I was going to have it's very frustrating to hear something like that said. They wear a mask in surgery so the surgeons don't breathe into an open wound. Okay, that's a whole different
story. No, it's so they don't pass germs. It's so they don't pass germs.
Disease has been debunked. Professor Fetzer has on his site a study that was published among many that showed that even wearing masks in surgery don't do any good. And as a matter of fact, what's very interesting about that study is it showed that there was actually better outcomes. Now, I'm not sure if I believe that, but the bottom line has been multiple studies that show that wearing a mask doesn't do any good at all.
Paul,
so that was not where I was going. But
Paul, is there
then all I'll say to you is stay away from me when you don't wear your mask. Keep far from me. And allow me to wear mine, because I have the freedom to wear mine.
Paul,
and you believe what you want, I'll believe what I want. I tend to believe my mom more than you.
Paul, stick around. I'm going to bring in Giuseppe. Giuseppe, join the conversation with Jesse. Giuseppe.
Governor, great to have you on Revolution Radio, and I've been a big fan of your body of work since you were the body many decades ago. And my question is, you know, you're unique in the sense that you have been a true independent. You've been on the mass media entertainment platform. And then surprisingly, almost shockingly, you were able to migrate to a leadership position in a state and win the governorship, which is was so wonderful because I don't really think there's another independent who's really done that in my lifetime, a true independent.
And then Angus King.
Oh, okay, Angus King. Okay, that's right. And so my question is, you tell that amazing story of getting sat down by, you know, the garbage man, and I'm paraphrasing, and all these CIA people, and you got a talking to, right? This is how it all works.
I volunteered to go to it. They just requested my permission. Requested my presence.
and your idea of being a true independent to force the two parties to work together is absolutely brilliant. My question, though, is there are as it is exhibited by this massive globalist power play to try and destroy sovereign economies and create this great reset, the so-called new normal, and the so-called COVID-19 pandemic, when if you look at statistics, it's really just been a moderate flu season. But my question, this is leading up to the question now, is
all your years of when you were doing your conspiracy shows and some on mass media, and then you went to the internet. Today, now, if you were going to roll out a show, who would you not talk about? Who is a power that you do not want to bring to your front door?
Well, I talk about everybody on RT. I have a show. I'm on every Friday night at 6:30, and I'm shown multiple times on Friday and over the weekend on RT America. I've been on there now 4 years. And, in fact, I went to the infamous meeting that everyone talks about. I was there, I think. That was the 10-year anniversary of RT. The keynote speaker was Vladimir Putin. I met Gorbachev that night. Putin walked over to me and Jill Stein was there. I didn't see Flynn. And Putin walked over to me at the end of the night and held his hand out, and he called me governor. He said, "Thank you very much, governor." He said, "I want to tell you that I will not interfere in your show artistically in any way, shape, or form. You have complete control."
Wow.
And I looked at him and I said, "Thank you, Mr. President. I appreciate that." And so far in 4 years, he's been a man of his word. They have not interfered. I talk about anything I want. I give opinions, any opinion I want to give. I've never been censored by them at all. And I find it ironic that it takes Russia to give me my free speech, because I'm pretty much banned in America. And that's because of that lawsuit that I had with the American sniper. People aren't aware that when I won that, which how overwhelming must the evidence have been for the jury to side with me over the dead war hero, his widow, and six guys in uniform trying to perpetrate a bogus story. And yet the jury found for me. And the deal was, though, it went to the Court of Appeals, and 32 major media conglomerates of America, New York Times, Washington Post, PBS, you name them, they came forward with their big-time lawyers, and they got two appeals court, Eighth Circuit judges, Riley and Shepard, to break two of their rules to overturn the case and send it back for a new trial, and then I was basically forced to settle. Because word came out, you ain't going to win.
Wow.
And so I went through that ordeal, and that's really why I'm on RT, because who out of these 32 mainstream media conglomerates is going to hire me now? And so I don't do mainstream media, because whenever I do it, I give them a ratings boost. Well, I don't get paid shit, excuse me. I don't get paid nothing for that. And so I've quit doing mainstream. I'm not going to make them money. And here's what it came out to be on the sting of the verdict. What they overturned was a Minnesota law called unjust enrichment, which means you can't enrich yourself from wrongdoing. We proved they defamed me, and they made money doing it with this book. The book made $40 million. It jumped 100,000 copies in one day, the day he trashed me on national TV. So don't tell me I didn't sell the book. And we proved that. Well, what these two judges, Riley and Shepard, ruled is that, oh, that's okay. We're throwing that law out, and that it's all right for the media to make money telling lies. There's your birth of fake media right there. Because they now can't, because of these two judges, Riley and Shepard at the Eighth Circuit, you cannot sue and get money from the media when they defame you. It would be like this. Say you and your buddy had clean records and you decided to go rob the bank. So you go rob the bank and you're a couple knuckleheads, you get caught. But you got clean record. You go to jail, you spend 2 to 5, you get out on good behavior. Well, guess what? When you get out now, you get to keep the money you took.
Right.
So if you rob the bank for $1 million and go do a couple years in jail, what the courts are essentially saying is, well, they can't get your money. You made that money, so when you get out, you can keep it. And that's what they basically said. The media can defame you, make money off defaming you, promote defaming you, and then when you prove they did, they don't have to pay you nothing. They get to keep all the money that they made.
Stick around.
And by the way, the American sniper's wife, The widow, she was never on the hook for a cent. Everything on her side was paid for by insurance and the book company. So for those people that think I'm the villain by continuing the lawsuit to clear my name, I just did what any other American would have done to clear their name from a bogus lie.
Oh, I followed that case closely. I completely realized and understood you were in the right.
Well, you know, but I'm I still have people yelling at me in hotels over that.
Jeez, I believe.
No, I mean, that ain't funny to me. I have people that come up to me and read me off.
I get it. I get it. Yeah, Giuseppe, I understand.
Stick around with Paul and Chris. I'm going to bring in Scorpio. Scorpio, you're on with Jesse Ventura.
Jesse, it's great to talk to you. Back when you were governor, my father lived in Minneapolis, and there was a very popular T-shirt at the time that said, our governor can kick your governor's ass.
No, our governor can beat up your governor.
Yeah, yeah. And,
I had nothing to do with it. I didn't make a dime off it. Those were people profiting off me. I had nothing to do with that T-shirt, and they were even selling it at the airport.
Oh, yeah. No, it was just a funny and probably very true.
I don't know
anyway.
About that.
Oh, I'd say that's probably true. But, I have a question. I respect your opinion on masking, but let me ask you, what would you say if the government says that masking needs to be permanent? Dr. Fauci and some other people have already alluded to that. I guess my question is, where do you draw the line on masking if they say it's permanent?
Okay, here, everybody, let's learn. Okay, let's take a definition of liberty. Now, your liberty ends when it affects my liberty. Follow me? When your freedom affects me, then your liberty and freedom has to end. Why do you think we have speed limits? Why do you think we have laws for the good of the common? I mean, if you think about the mask, then why should there be speed limits? We should be able to go out on highways and drive as damn fast as we feel like it. If we're in control, the hell with everybody else.
Ridiculous analogy.
If we put them in danger. But that's the point. So with the, where is the line? The line is at this point. If you do not have the liberty or freedom to make me sick.
Is that a cold or the flu?
You are not keeping up on current
events. Paul,
hang on. You ought to know that virologists are claiming all around the world are claiming that they don't do anything to prevent anybody from getting sick if a virus particle.
Look, I'm not going to argue. I'm not going to argue with you guys on masks. I have my belief. I believe what my mother wore was correct. And I'm not going to argue with you guys who say that masks make no difference. I believe that they do, and statistics show that they do.
Then you can wear one, but you can't use as an argument to say that my liberty ends when your safety is in danger. My
yes, because you could get me sick.
Constitution and by God,
you could get me sick. You can get me. You have no right to make me sick.
They're right,
Paul.
You have no right to make me sick. Your freedom does not give you the right to make me sick.
Paul, I think it's.
Stop talking for 1 second.
I think it's obvious that Jesse, believes what the government has claimed about COVID, whereas many of us do not, and that therefore makes a great difference in the argument here. See, so
and let's take a look now. What's happening with it? Is it getting less or is it getting more?
Well, there's an ambiguity in the case. The case rates are going up, Jesse.
It's rising, isn't it? It's getting more and more. So clearly the non-mask people might be making the wrong decision because it's growing and getting bigger. It's not getting smaller.
It's actually 98% false positives, Jesse, unbelievably. The tests are bad. And just because you have a positive test doesn't mean you have the coronavirus. Most people don't, in fact, overwhelmingly.
Well, like I said, Jim, you guys do what you want. Just stay clear of me. I'll wear my mask. I'll be happy doing it.
Got it.
And because to me, it isn't that big of a sacrifice. I said publicly, I am so glad the generation today is not alive when my parents were fighting the Nazis in World War II. because then the country truly had to sacrifice. They had to go on rationing. They had to go on all these horrible things, and the people did it. Where if you ask the people today to do that, Adolf would win.
Scorpio, did you want to follow up, or you want
to? Well, Paul kind of stepped on me. I was just hoping to get an answer to my question. If masking is made permanent, would you support that, I guess, is my question.
It can't be made permanent. It's up to us
well,
to
Fauci
do it.
Well, Fauci already said that it may need to be a permanent...
Nobody can make you wear, make you do anything. And
but
so
Fauci already
is,
alluded to that it may need to be permanent.
They may be asking us to wear them until the virus has gotten under control. What the hell's wrong with that? You know?
As I say, Jesse...
There's a quarter of a million people are dead from this thing.
Jesse believes a virus...
That's right. I shouldn't believe that all those people died. They haven't really died. All these nurses and doctors on TV are all actors. They're not really showing actual emergency rooms and all these people being interviewed who've lost people and loved ones and are crying on TV. They're all, we need to expand the Academy Awards, I'll tell you.
Well,
these people are the best actors I've ever seen.
Unfortunately, they're classifying as COVID deaths a lot of people who died from other causes. Jesse.
Yeah, they all had heart attacks. I know. They all had heart attacks, and they're calling it COVID because wasn't it Donnie that told us the doctors make more money then?
Well, it was
which,
that doctor.
Which to me, which to me, okay, which to me is again an insult to my mom. So I'll take it as such.
Jesse, it was Minnesota State Senator Scott Jensen, who's also an MD, who discovered that they were paying hospitals $13,000 for every patient they classified as COVID and $39,000 for every patient they put on a ventilator.
I'll tell you, Jimmy, you need to be on the national news because you're the guy that knows it all and has the answers to everything. They need you on the national news so you can straighten all this shit
out.
Well,
I was suggesting you put Senator Scott Jensen.
You can then go out there and tell everybody masks are bullshit, just like Donnie did, and you see the results of it. It cost him the election, you know. But, you know, other than that, yeah, go out there and tell everybody it's all bull crap, and then when you catch it, well, we'll, you know, maybe you'll have a different idea then.
Jesse, we got several
I can't control, you know, I come from, like I told people, four people in my family all served at a time of war. And I know as a military person, you have to do things sometimes that you don't necessarily agree with.
Right.
You don't necessarily like it, but you know it has to get done.
We got
and
more
that's the attitude I take. And if you people want to chastise me for taking that type of attitude, then blame it on our socialist, and let me add that, our socialist U.S. military. Because, you know, the military's nothing but socialism.
Jesse, we'll be right back.
Listen, Revolution Radio, Freedom Slips.
Anyway, I'm getting out of here.
We'll be right back.
I'm done. That's an hour and a half. I'm finished.
Thanks for coming.
You're
doing great.
All right, see you later.
But that doesn't mean that they're telling the truth as opposed to fiction.
And Genesis chapter 6, verse 4. And there were giants in the earth in those days, and also after that, when the sons of God came and unto the daughters of men, indicating that there were giants before the Nephilim.
And sons of God, plural. They weren't talking about Jesus coming down.
That's right. Yeah.
I'm Steve Crawford, host of Factor Theory Live. Join me every Sunday night from 10 p.m. till midnight Eastern Standard Time on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. Check it out.
Even the government admits that 9/11 was a conspiracy. But did you know that it was an inside job? That Osama had nothing to do with it? That the Twin Towers were blown apart by a sophisticated arrangement of mini or micro nukes? That Building 7 collapsed 7 hours later because of explosives planted in the building? Barry Jennings was there. He heard them go off and felt himself stepping over dead people. The U.S. Geological Survey conducted studies of dust gathered from 35 locations in Lower Manhattan and found elements that would not have been there had this not been a nuclear event. Ironically, that means the government's own evidence contradicts the government's official position. 9/11 was brought to us compliments of the CIA, the neocons in the Department of Defense, and the Mossad. Don't let yourself be played. Read America Nuked on 9/11, available at moonrockbooks.com. That's moonrockbooks.com.
Thank you for listening to Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported radio station on the Internet. Please help support this station so this battle can continue forward. Revolution Radio!
Hi everybody, it's me, the Fetch, host of Inside the Eye Live. Before the Sunday mainstream media, political pundit talk shows, there is Inside the Eye Live, where we break down some of the weekly mainstream media talking points before the talking points even get aired. Add in some entertaining stories, weather, cats, intriguing and informative guests, and you get one of the most listened to Saturday morning streaming media political talk shows going today. And it's all right here on our flagship station, Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. So join me, the Fetch, for Inside the Eye Live every Saturday morning at 10 o'clock a.m. Eastern. It is truly intelligent media for the politically aware.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates. You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
Oh, I'm sorry about that. The governor has left the arena. I saw it coming. I mean, we all know more and less about various things. He's a great guy, but he doesn't know as much about coronavirus, masks, and all that. Paul was, of course, right, but I knew the problem here was maintaining, you know, the guest on the show, where he ultimately decided to withdraw. So there it is. I want to have us a conversation about it. Chris from Vermont never got a chance to say a word. Chris, come on in and give us your thoughts. Chris from Vermont, if you're not there, then let's see who else we have. Scott from San Diego. Scott, go ahead.
Hey, guys. You know what? Jesse Ventura is a puke. You know, He does these shows about conspiracy theory that tries to make himself as a critical thinker. Not one time did he ask any of you about your evidence as to why you're saying what you're saying. All he said was, no, no, no. Oh, no, no, no. I follow the government plan. You're wrong.
It's an interesting. You know,
my mom. I believe my mom. Screw your mom, Jesse.
Yeah. Well, it's an interesting thing. He's actually quite intellectual when it comes to JFK. I mean, look at all the books he mentioned, but clearly he hasn't been digging in on the COVID. I'm not quite sure what to say about it. We also have
a
call.
Brain dead.
Go ahead. Is that you, Paul?
Thank you. This is Chris from Northern Vermont. Greenheart.
Yeah, go ahead, Chris.
At a recent fire department meeting, we had a photo op, and I said I didn't want to wear a mask, and we started masturbating in public and masturbating in the post office. Masturbating is really something that should be kept at home in private, because masturbating in public is very, very poor taste.
M-A-S-K-E-R.
Masturbating. But the governor, the former governor was correct. Let's just agree to disagree.
Please record your message. And when you have finished recording, you may hang up or press 1 for more options.
We kind of pushed it and we lost him, and that's a real shame.
I don't think this is a agree to disagree. This isn't Coke or Pepsi. This is the freedom of humanity here. This isn't, you know, this.
That's exactly right.
This team or that team.
Yeah,
you know,
you're
this
exactly
isn't
right.
I would agree to disagree is a farce. You know, I'm not going to discuss that. I'm not going to just say, what kind of crap is that? That's just a way to shut down the conversation so he doesn't have to hear your information.
What he did was the equivalent of a little kid who doesn't want to hear his parents tell him what to do. So he put his fingers in his ears and he's going la, 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 as fast, as loud as he can. So he doesn't have to listen. That's what the governor did. And it was really disappointing because he's a sharp guy, but he's also like, in that area, completely rigid in his thinking. And he was unwilling to entertain any kind of evidence. And the ridiculousness of his, well, yeah, I guess, Jim, you got to go on the national news. Like, he was mocking you and just using an ad hominem response to actual facts. And facts such as last week, a massive double-blind scientific study by the Danish government, 6,000 patients, proved that masks are absolutely worthless. And tomorrow on the Wisdom Circle, the first hour is Dr. Colleen Huber, a naturopath in Arizona, who got kicked off of Twitter because she was touting this study. And it's just the level of censorship. And then Jesse the Body would turn around and say, but, you know, it's up to you as an individual to do what you want. But then he's like, well, your liberties can't affect my liberties. It's like he's talking in circles.
Well, he was
if like, you worry about your liberties. Then,
Giuseppe,
if he's too scared, then he should stay home.
Giuseppe, it was because he was believes the coronavirus is a threat that he was actually appealing to the classic harm principle that you're entitled, you know, to maximize your freedom as long as it doesn't harm others. I mean, that was his appeal, but it was predicated
even if it is a real threat. I mean, what lengths are we going to go to? And how far are we going to get on our knees and lay on our bellies to stay alive?
Look, I'm just explaining Jesse's argument. I'm opposed to mass lockdown, social distancing. It's all a pile of shit. Absolutely. It's harmful, very damaging. I'm hopeful the president is going to be making a statement about it before Thanksgiving. And I have reason to believe that is going to happen. Paul, I thought you were very deft in mentioning the study about mass in surgery, because, you know, when I discovered that, I was just floored. There were actually like 17 different studies showing that masks were not helpful during surgery. I mean, that's just amazing.
Yeah, and I was just going to say,
can I jump in here? I've been waiting patiently, Dr. Fetz. This is Jer Bear.
Yeah, go ahead. Okay, sure.
Go ahead.
I have a very interesting question to ask him. If he remembered him and Willie Nelson in a bus, I don't know where the event was. They were shooting the breeze.
Yeah.
And the breeze was that I wanted to know if it was confirmed that he said the political system is just like wrestling. And the fact that when the day's over, they all go have cocktails. Saying like the Dems and the
they
reps.
They all go home and have a beer. Yeah. Well, he was more or less implying that. Yeah. He was more or less implying that, Gerber. I think that probably that was accurate. I'm a big fan of Willie Nelson, too, but I don't know much about Willie's politics.
Well, they were just in a bus, and I saw the video, and it's like they're shooting the breeze, and he says, yeah, at the end of the day, it's like wrestling. We all get together, the Democratic and the Republican parties get together, and it's in the theater's off, and they party.
Well, there were times in the past. If you went back 30 years or so, there might be some merit to that. But in recent times, and certainly since Trump became president, it's not been true at all. And I thought that was Jesse's greatest failure to put together the pieces, that Trump really has reformed the Republican Party, turned it into a blue-collar party, and that Trump is a threat to the establishment on both sides of the aisle, which is why he's been attacked so viciously. Yeah, Paul, go ahead, Paul.
Yeah, so, you know, anyway, I was just going to say, hey, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to do any of that. It just happened, to be honest with you guys.
Paul, you know, Paul, you think I didn't see this coming? I mean, I knew you were going to say what you believe, even if it were Jesse. I mean, look, I don't fault you. I don't fault you. It's not a problem. It's just the way it played out.
Okay.
Can I just jump in real quick? Because I've got to drop off the call here in a minute.
Yeah, Scorpio, go ahead.
Thank you. Here's what I found strange. He never answered my question about what if they make masking permanent. He goes, they can't do that. Ha, 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 ha. But several high up people have already implied that masking might become permanent.
Oh, yeah, yeah. The Bilderberger's a bastard from the World Economic Forum, all that. They're talking about permanent masking. Yeah, it's absurd. We cannot rather fight a civil war than have us permanently masked. That's so absurd.
Well, we better get used to that concept, because before you go, Scorpio, first of all, A, I didn't mean to step on you. I apologize. But B, yes, if you're not living here in this country now, but I think you can sense when they started doing this back in April, right? Nobody would have thought they're going to do it in Thanksgiving and Christmas all the way through the year, and yet they're doing it. So now, how much bigger of a step would it be? Oh, just another 3 months. Oh, just another 3 months. Okay, now just another 6 months. You know, people are becoming used to it. I've already gotten into it at work. You know, I hope I can work there again and work it out with my boss. That's a separate story. And it's absurd. I showed him the law. I showed him what it's not. It's not a law. It's protocol. It's guidance. There's nothing. The county has no authority, but they got the signs up. Oh, everybody's got to wear a mask. And it's just like, oh, my God. It's like we're living in a world of insanity. And
Well, Jesse's a terrific guy, but like all of us, he has his shortcomings, and we just stumbled right into one because it's a big issue today. So as far as I'm concerned.
I gotta go, guys. Thanks for taking my call, Jim.
Thanks for being here. Thanks so much.
Thanks so much. Bye. But just Giuseppe, for the fun of it, quickly.
Give me your further thoughts, Giuseppe.
Go ahead. Yeah.
Giuseppe, did you have to go too? Maybe so. They might have a show today. Maybe.
Well, Jim, I'm just going to say goodbye. Thanks for having me on. It was a great interview. And I wish Jesse had answered my question, because they intend to make this masking thing permanent. This is the biggest issue of our day. No question about it.
Highly relevant and appropriate question, Scorpio. Thanks for that.
Oh, okay. Thanks. Right. We'll see you tomorrow. Yeah. Bye-bye.
Take care, Scorpio.
Chris Weiner.
Okay. Bye, Paul.
Are you still here, Chris?
Yes, sir. Yeah.
Go ahead. Give us your thoughts.
Well, I agree that this is something I've been saying it since March, that I've been calling this as an economic reset. I knew the financial system had to really be reset and restructured. They pretty much revamped and took out the petrodollar. And this COVID thing has been something, it's not a new concept. They've had this planned and arguably, you know, planned since the 90s. And people that have been aware of this have been targeted by, you know, aspects of our own government as terrorists or racist white nationalists or things like this, extremists. The white nationalist is deemed the biggest threat to national security in appraisal to some Pentagon reports. So this is alarming to me. The fact that we'd be the ones that would have the most to lose in terms of our 401ks, our retirements, our property, our principles, our constitution, our amendments, everything. So I think the Trump base is not only being targeted but disenfranchised, and this is like the systematic frustration of justice. I think they're trying to do whatever they can get away with, and they'll push it as far as we allow them.
Absolutely. And I'm very hopeful that Trump is going to be able to cope with this as well as he has all the other shit that's been slung in his direction. It's absolutely unbelievable what this guy has had to deal with, from the Russiagate, Ukrainegate, the impeachment, the coronavirus, all the other happy horseshit. It's been unbelievable. I'm just hopeful that he can continue to show the same skill and agility and intelligence and the interest of the American people that he has in the past. Who else do we have here?
Hope that these indictments will continue. That was a big shy of all the pressure they put on him. He couldn't even pertain to duties as a good as an excellent president, because all the pressures they put on him. This next 4 years, he could have done it, or I hope that he does it.
Well, I do believe he will be re-inaugurated. Dean, go ahead, join the conversation, Dean.
I just wondered what, I mean, I guess we'll never know, but I don't know if you can ever, like, post him questions later, but I just wondered what his thoughts were going to be on the Biden shoo-in election, how he saw the year 2021 and how he saw where the major flaws would be in the presidency and the policy. Because he seems to be very much against Donald Trump. I'd just like to know that, is he kind of zero-sum game? It has to be a left-leaning, independent, or nothing else? Is that kind of what you usually think?
For whatever reason, I don't think Jesse has figured out who the Donald really is. I mean, that's just my take. You know, I see him very, very differently. He sees the two parties as very similar. I see them today as very, very different. The establishment on both sides being opposed to Trump. I thought it was ironic, actually, because he said what we need is an independent. In my opinion, Donald Trump is as close to an independent as we're going to have here in an election in the United States, given our two-party system.
Go ahead. And was originally left-leaning with Democrat Party, was he not?
Who, Jesse?
No. Donald Trump originally.
Yeah. Way back when he was a Democrat, yeah. Yeah.
Now, I will say this, as someone from the UK, before Donald Trump became president, I saw a bad side to him. I didn't know him very well, like all about him, because he wasn't as big as a personality over here. But I just remember him kind of like rubbing me up the wrong way about what he was going to do with certain golf courses in Scotland and so on. And, you know, I know this is only anecdotal, but at the end of the day, when that golf course was done, I've got to give it to the guy. He still kept the nature in place and the characteristic of the land that he actually took. So, yeah, things started to change for me with Donald Trump. That, you know, you demonize people too much sometimes.
Yeah. Who we got like to take it?
But he also he made those big berms to cover up the people that were complaining about that golf course built up in Ireland. He built big berms, and also he did wreck some of the ecosystem up there.
In Scotland.
It was
pretty minimal, but yes, there were a couple of disputes with a couple of homes, but it wasn't anywhere near the kind of chaos that was being put forward by the media at the time.
The kind of people that can relate to Trump the most are those people that have been independent or that have started their own businesses and done things that are not the norm. In other words, if you just, you know, go to school, go out and get a job, cash your paycheck and do what your boss says, it's not going to be easy for you to handle an ego like Trump. But I kind of see where, you know, a guy like him, to get things done, you're going to ruffle feathers. You know, it's just the way it is. But in the end, you know, he's one of those people. It's a very small percentage of the male, you know, population that is the driver and the achiever and the kind of person that will push through to see their own vision. And you can sort of try to say it's negative because it's his ego, but the bottom line is the world has been built by men with egos. That's just the way it is.
Yeah, of course. Yes, you're right, Paul. That's good. Yes. Who else do we have here still? I know Scorpio had to leave. I think Giuseppe had to leave. Mitchell.
No, I'm still here.
Oh, Giuseppe, then give us your further reflections, Giuseppe.
Well, I'd like to make the elaborate on Chris's excellent point about the white nationalists as being vilified. The decent population of America is still 60%. Well, actually 25 or 30% are out of their minds and color revolution, mask wearing, cowardly libtards now. But the people like all of us on this call are being vilified. And the reason Trump was attacked even before he was inaugurated is because he represented who we are. We want a populist movement. We want a nationalist movement dedicated to the sovereign republic and the decent citizens of this country. And if you remember, Trump wanted to forge a great relationship with Putin. It would have been good for the world. And he was just vilified and forced into not doing. He could have been one of the greatest presidents ever, and he was constantly hounded by the dual citizen traitors like Schumer, like that subhuman Adam Schiff, like Jerry Nadler, who just shit himself on national TV a couple weeks ago, and these low-life international Jews, and they were all over Trump from day one, not because it's Trump, who's this big brand and great, it's because he represented us and he was elected by us.
Yes, I think so. I think that's basically right, Giuseppe. Yeah, I agree with that. Paul, did you want to come back with further thoughts? Paul?
Yeah, no, I agree with all that. And what I was going to say earlier is I was going to keep it light today. As a matter of fact, I was going to reminisce about the good old days of wrestling, because when Jesse Ventura was wrestling, right, that was when you had all those classic characters.
Yeah, go on.
Yeah, no, you had Hulk Hogan, you had the Ultimate Warrior, you had the Macho Man, Randy Savage, the Iron Sheik, all those people.
Yeah.
I was actually going to have a little fun, and I was going to ask him, I said, out of all those people, which one would have really given you a run for the money if it was a real wrestling match, and stuff like that. And I do respect, I used to watch his conspiracy shows. I was going to ask him if he still lives off the grid in Mexico part of the year, you know, things like that, but all I started to do was to relate to the idea that government officials don't ever answer your questions. And he interrupted me and started talking about, the masks are not fake. And it's like, okay. And we just went a different direction. But I was going to mind my manners today, Jim, just so you know.
Can I just make a quick comment?
I believe that, Paul, 100%. I know. I'm sorry. I just figured something like this might happen. I hoped it wouldn't, but obviously Jesse chose to depart because he wasn't in the position to deal with arguments about the mask. There it is. I mean, I think he's a great guy. I still admire him. I think he's super and done a lot of good. This is just an area where this is not his greatest strength.
Could I just make a quick comment?
Yeah, go ahead, Dean.
Yeah, it was just that actually, I think ironically, if Jesse was involved in some kind of government, I know this is a kind of what if scenario. I think one of the key themes that he seems to have put across, at least on TV shows I've seen him in, is he's really keen on government transparency.
Yeah.
And I think through government transparency, no matter what his original thoughts would be, it would kind of all come out in the wash. Do you know what I mean? So sometimes even if someone's a bit sort of like, you know, sort of going down the wrong road in one subject, that key idea of ramming home and putting in place an infrastructure of transparency can win you through at the end of the day, because you have great people around you if you're in government, you know?
Yes.
This is Chris. I have something relevant to add, please.
Go ahead.
Yeah. Thank you, Mr. Fetzer. So we have a free newspaper here in Burlington, Vermont, called 7 Days. And if anyone wants to look it up on the internet, the current issue dated November 18-25, really just amazing. Page 39, the article is called Driven to Extremism, Hungarian Linguist at Norwich University, which is a military university, dissects online far-right propaganda. Her name is Esther Zenz from Hungary, and she is looking to identify individuals at risk of becoming radicalized. The article quotes a 2019 report of Anti-Defamation League Centers on Extremism. Far-right groups in the U.S. were to blame for nearly three-quarters of all extremism-associated homicides in the last 10 years.
This is just crock of shit. That's all.
Oh, the article takes everything, flips it upside down, makes us all look like a bunch of wackos. Here's this lady studying it. Now, two more really interesting points to note here. And again, this is the current issue of 7 Days, 7daysvt.com. Look at the cover. The cover has two brown hands with a ribbon on a gift box. And I looked at it. I didn't notice it at first. Each of the brown hands has 6 fingers. Ooh, scary. And then my horoscope for Aquarius talks about all about becoming. And we know the Luciferians love to say, I am becoming. And the Christ teaches us, I am. So, I mean, this newspaper, which came out when I was in college in the 90s, is incredibly transformative of this whole culture, the liberal nest of Vermont. And, you know, I had another light topic for Mr. Ventura. I was going to ask him if he had any insider knowledge on the Predator as being an astral entity or actual extraterrestrial race. But he probably wouldn't have disclosed anything if he doesn't want to hear that masks are just for surgeons so they don't spit in open wounds. So
the Predator is portrayed as extraterrestrial, of course. I mean, that's one of the great science fiction creatures of all time, that Predator. And that, you know,
it certainly is. And Mr. Fetzer, I personally have had two run-ins with them. So they are a very nasty, deceptive, vile creature. And I've also had the privilege of meditating with Sasquatch. And I was very curious, and I wanted to ask Sasquatch about it. And, of course, the Sasquatch is invisible when you're meditating with them. But the Sasquatch immediately replied, "Do not even think of that vile creature in our presence."
The vile creature being the Predator.
Yes, sir.
Hmm, very curious.
Yeah.
Giuseppe, your further thoughts or...
I really like Greenheart. He's comes up with a lot of fascinating topics, and he's a real supporter of Revolution Radio. So hats off to Greenheart, and I'd like to hear more about meditating with Sasquatch at some point.
Oh, thanks. Well, on that note, so we have our weekly flag wave in Barrie, and the Council of Barrie voted to raise a BLM flag. They're calling us all hate mongers and a hate group. Our state motto is freedom and unity, and that's what we're promoting. Clearly, they're divisive with their BLM flag, but they had to concede to allow back the blue flag to be raised the following month in the City Hall Park, and they're calling that a hate flag. So, I mean, it's just going crazy here.
Do we still have Chris Weinert here? Chris?
Yeah, I'm here. Yeah, I'm here.
Give us your final thoughts. We're getting close. Go ahead.
Well, I think that there is a culture war that's going on, and these people that are getting away with election fraud are also inverting the perceptions of society so that basically anyone with a conscience will second guess their own perceptions in exchange for the insistence of repetition of lies or half-truths, whether it's them being complicit in election fraud and then foisting it off on Russia or whatever they've done with this one. It's almost like they say the exact opposite or accuse their opponents of their own misdeeds in advance so that there is no scrutiny that's allowed without looking, you know. They did it in the witch trials. They do it all over the time in Inquisitions. So this is like not a new tactic, but it's just they're weaponizing, you know, the feminists, the liberals. Like I said yesterday's show, this is really an operation. And well, it's evident to me. I don't know. What do you think?
Even in his absence, I want to thank Jesse Ventura for coming on the show. I continue to regard him as a great American. We all have our shortcomings and no more and less about various subjects. I thought all the calls were on the money, very appropriate. I didn't even take exception to Paul, who, of course, reacted quickly, which is his want. Not surprising, but there it is. Anyway, I thought it was pretty fascinating, all things considered, and particularly enjoyed the part about JFK, knowing we were going to be wandering into some areas where things were likely to be far less convivial, as it turned out. So thank you all very much. You are great. It's been Jesse Venturio. Have a great Thanksgiving.
Thank you for listening to Revolution.